You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Harmony of the Creative Word, the Human Being and the Elemental, Animal, Plant, and Mineral Kingdoms. 12 lectures by Rudolf Steiner in 4 parts, formerly known as Man as Symphony of the Creative Word, Collected Works, Volume 230, Revised Translation by Matthew Barton. And these were given in Dornach between 19th of October, 11th November, 1923. Part 2 is, overall, the theme is the inner connection of world phenomena and the essential nature of the world. This is Lecture 4, given on the 26th of October, 1923. We have studied certain aspects of the connection between earth conditions, cosmic conditions, animals and man, and shall continue with these studies during the coming days. Footnote: in what follows, the planetary stages of earth's evolution will be designated with initial capitals, whereas the planetary bodies, as they are today, are in lowercase. The distinction between these two, however, is not always clear. Editor: readers aside, I will say old moon for the actual moon epoch and just moon for the planet. End of readers aside. Today, however, I wish to find the transition to still broader spheres that we shall have to consider in future. I should like, in the first place, to draw attention to what has already been described in my title, Occult Science, as the evolution of the Earth in the cosmos, beginning with the primordial old Saturn metamorphosis of the Earth. This old Saturn condition must be thought of as already containing within itself everything belonging to our planetary system. The separate planets of our planetary system, from Saturn onward to the Moon, were at that time still within old Saturn, which, as you know, consisted only of heat, ether, as undifferentiated world bodies. Saturn, old Saturn, which had not even attained to the density of air, but was merely heat ether, contained in an undifferentiated etheric condition everything which later became independent and took individual form in the separate planets. We then distinguish, as the second metamorphosis of Earth evolution, what, in a comprehensive sense, I have called the old Sun metamorphosis of the Earth. Here we have to do with the gradual evolution from the fire globe of old Saturn to the air globe, the light-permeated, light-irradiated, glittering air globe of the Sun. Then we have a third metamorphosis, out of which, after the earlier conditions had been recapitulated, there evolved on the one hand all that was of a sun nature, which at that time still comprised the earth and moon, all this is described in title Occult Science, and all that was already externalized and to which Saturn, in its state of separation, belonged. At the same time, however, during this period of the old moon metamorphosis, we meet the fact that the Sun separated from what was now a blend of Earth and Moon. I have often described how the kingdoms of nature, which we know today, did not then exist, and how the Earth did not enclose a mineral mass, but was, if I may so express myself, of the nature of horn, so that the solid constituents freed themselves, forming rock-like projections of horny substance, jutting out from the moon mass, which was now the consistency of water. Then there arose the conditions of the fourth metamorphosis, which are the earth conditions of today. Now, if we draw a diagram of these four metamorphoses in their sequence, we have first the old Saturn condition as a body of heat, and he draws on the blackboard, that still contained, dissolved within it, everything later contained in our planetary system. Then we draw the old Sun metamorphosis, the old Moon metamorphosis, and the Earth metamorphosis. Two things can be distinguished within these four stages. Just consider how, during the evolution of old Saturn and on into the old Sun epoch, substance had only advanced to a gaseous state. Evolution took its start from the globe of fire. The fiery globe was then metamorphosed and densified into a globe of air, which, however, was already imbued and glittering with light. Here we have the first part of evolution. Then we have the part of evolution in which the moon, old moon, first plays a role. For it is the role played by old moon evolution which enabled it to fashion those horny rock formations. And during the earth metamorphosis, the moon separated off and became a satellite, leaving the inner earth forces behind for the earth stage. The forces of gravity, for instance, are definitely forces that have remained behind from old moon evolution as something physical. The earth would never have developed the forces of gravity had not residues remained from when the old moon was part of it. The moon itself departed. It is that colony in cosmic space about which I spoke to you from its spiritual aspect only a few days ago. Its substantiality is quite different from that of the earth, but it left behind in the earth what, speaking in a wider sense, may be called the earth's magnetism. The forces of the earth, namely the forces of gravity and the effects defined as the effects of weight, have remained over from old moon evolution. And thus we can say that on the one hand we have here, there's a diagram on page 66, in the old Saturn and old Sun condition, the essentially warm, light irradiated metamorphosis, if the two are taken together. And on the other hand, we have in the old moon and earth condition, the old moon sustained watery metamorphosis, a watery condition which evolved during the old moon metamorphosis and which then remained during the earth metamorphosis. The solid element is actually called forth by the forces of gravity. These two pairs of metamorphoses differ from each other to a marked degree. And we must be clear about the fact that everything present in an earlier condition is again inherent in the later one. What constituted the ancient fire globe of Saturn remained as heat substance in all the subsequent metamorphoses. And when today we move about the regions of the earth and everywhere encounter warmth, this warmth is the remains of the ancient Saturn condition. Wherever we find air or gaseous bodies, we have the remains of ancient Sun evolution. When we look out into the sun-irradiated atmosphere and have imbued ourselves with feeling and understanding for this old sun epoch of evolution, we can say to ourselves with truth, in this sun-irradiated atmosphere, we have remains of the ancient sun evolution. For had this ancient sun evolution not taken place, the relationship of our air with the rays of the sun, which are now there outside, would not have existed. Only through the fact that the sun was once united with the earth, that the light of the sun itself shone in the earth, which was still in a gaseous condition, so that the earth was an air globe, radiating light into cosmic space, only through this could the later metamorphosis occur, the present earth metamorphosis, in which the earth is enveloped by an atmosphere of air, into which the sun's rays fall from outside. But the sun's rays have a deep inner connection with the earth's atmosphere. They do not, however, impinge, as present-day physicists somewhat crudely state, like small shot projected to the gaseous atmosphere. But the rays of the sun have a deep inner relationship with the air. And this relationship is actually the after-effect of their one-time union during the sun metamorphosis. Thus everything is mutually interrelated through the fact that the earlier conditions ever and again play into the later conditions in manifold ways. but during the time in which, speaking generally, Earth's stages of evolution took their course, as you find in Title Occult Science and as I have briefly sketched it for you here, everything evolved that is on the Earth and around it, and also everything that is in the Earth. And now we can say, when we contemplate the present-day Earth, we have, within it, the inner old moon, which produces the solid element. And this is essentially anchored in the Earth's magnetism. It is due to the inner old moon that solid matter exists and has weight. It is, after all, the forces of weight that make fluid into solid. We have next the actual conditions of Earth in the watery element, which appears in manifold ways, as groundwater, for instance, but also in the water which is present in rising vapors, in the rain that comes down, and so on. And further we have, in the surrounding atmosphere, what is of the nature of air. Moreover, all this is permeated by the element of fire, the remains of old Saturn. Even in our present-day Earth, we are able to point to things that in the realms above us are Sun-Saturn or Saturn-Sun. We can always say to ourselves, everything which is present in the warm air, which is irradiated with light, is Saturn's sun. We look up and actually find our air imbued with the effect of old Saturn, with the effect of old sun, which in the course of time has evolved into the actual atmosphere of the Earth, though this in itself is only an after effect of the old sun metamorphosis. Broadly speaking, this is what we find when we direct our gaze upward. When we direct our gaze downward, it is more a question of what arose from the last two metamorphoses. We have the heavy, solid element, or better expressed, the working of the forces of weight, the process of solidification. We have the fluid element. We have the moon-earth. These two parts of Earth existence can be strictly differentiated from each other. If you read Title Occult Science again with this in mind, you will see that the whole style is such that a marked hiatus occurs at the place where the old sun metamorphosis passes over into the old moon metamorphosis. Even today there is still a kind of sharp contrast between what is above and of the nature of old Saturn and what is below and of the nature of the earth-moon watery condition. Thus we can quite well differentiate between the Saturn-Sun, gaseous element, and the Moon-Earth, fluidic element. The one is above, the other below. When someone who sees into these things with initiation science contemplates the general course of the Earth's evolution and everything which has developed along with the Earth and belongs to it, his gaze falls first on the manifold variety of the insect world. One can well imagine that the very feeling engendered by the fluttering, glittering insect world would bring us into a certain connection with what is above and of the nature of the Saturn-Sun gaseous condition. And this is indeed the case. When we look at the butterfly with its shimmering colors, we see it fluttering in the air, in the light-flooded, light-irradiated air. It is borne on the waves of the air and barely comes in contact with anything of an earth-moon fluid nature. Its element is in the upper regions. And when one investigates the development of this creature, it is a remarkable thing that just in the case of this small insect, one arrives at very early epochs of earth metamorphosis. What today shimmers in the light-irradiated air as the butterfly's wings was first formed in germ during old Saturn and developed further during the time of old Sun. It was then that there arose what still today makes it possible for the butterfly to be essentially a creature of light and air. It is thanks to the sun itself that it can spread light everywhere. But it owes its ability to call forth what is fiery and shimmering in physical substance to the influence of old Saturn to the influence of the planets Saturn and Jupiter and Mars. The butterfly's nature cannot be understood if we look for it on the earth. The forces active in the nature of the butterfly must be sought above, in Sun, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. And when we go more into the detail of this wonderful development of the butterfly, I have already described it in connection with a human being as what may be called the cosmic embodiment of memory. When we go more into detail, we find in the first place the fluttering butterfly shimmering with light, born above the earth on the air. It then deposits its egg. Yes, the crude materialist says, quote, the butterfly deposits its egg, close quote, because under the influence of present-day unscientific science, the things of greatest importance are simply not studied. The question is this, to what does the butterfly entrust its egg when it deposits it? Now, investigate any place where the butterfly deposits its egg, and everywhere you will find that the egg is deposited in such a way that it cannot be withdrawn from the influence of the sun. The sun's influence on the egg is in fact not only present when the sun is shining directly onto the earth. I have often drawn attention to the fact that in winter farmers put their potatoes into the earth and cover them with it because the sun's warmth and the power of the sunlight that can come toward the earth in summer are actually in the earth in winter. On the surface of the earth, potatoes become frosted. They do not become frosted, but remain really good potatoes if they are buried in a pit and covered with a layer of earth. Because throughout the winter, the activity of the sun is inside the earth. Throughout the whole winter, we must look for the sun activity of summer under the earth. In December, for example, at a certain depth within the earth, we have the July activity of the sun. In July, the sun radiates its light and warmth onto the earth's surface. The warmth and light gradually penetrate deeper. And if in December we wish to look for what we experience on the surface of the earth in July, we must dig a pit, and then what was on the surface of the earth in July will be found in December at a certain depth within it. There the potato is buried in the July sun. Thus the sun is not only what crude materialistic understanding looks for it. The sun is actually present in many spheres. Only this is strictly regulated according to the seasons of the year in the cosmos. The butterfly never deposits its eggs where they cannot remain in some way or other in connection with the sun. Consequently, one expresses oneself badly when one says that the butterfly lays its eggs in the sphere of the earth. This it does not do at all. It lays its eggs in the sphere of the sun. The butterfly never descends as far down as the earth. Wherever the sun is present in what is earthly, where the butterfly seeks out the place to deposit its eggs, so that they remain entirely under the influence of the sun. In no way do they come under the influence of the earth. Then, as we know, a caterpillar emerges from this butterfly's egg. It remains under the influence of the sun, but now comes under another influence as well. The caterpillar would be unable to crawl did it not also come under another influence, and this is the influence of Mars. If you picture the earth with Mars circling around it, the Mars currents are everywhere in the upper region and also remain there. It is not a question of Mars itself being anywhere in particular, but we have the whole Mars sphere, and the caterpillar, as it crawls along, does so in the sense of the Mars sphere. Then the caterpillar becomes a chrysalis and builds a cocoon around itself. I described to you how the caterpillar is given up to the sun in this, and the threads are spun in the direction of the line of light. The caterpillar is exposed to the light, follows the rays of light, spins, stops when it is dark, and then goes on spinning. The whole cocoon is actually cosmic sunlight, sunlight which is interwoven with matter. Thus, when you have the cocoon of a silkworm, for example, which is used to make your silk garments, what is present in the silk is actually sunlight, into which is spun the substance of the silkworm. Out of its own body, the silkworm spins its matter in the direction of the sun's rays, and in this way creates the cocoon around itself. But that this may happen, it needs the intervention of Jupiter activity. The sun's rays have to be modified through Jupiter activity. Then, as you know, the butterfly emerges from the cocoon, from the chrysalis, the butterfly which is born on the light and radiant with light. It leaves the dark chamber into which the light could only enter, as it did into the cromlechs, in the way I described to you in the case of the ancient druid's cromlechs. There the sun comes under the influence of Saturn, and it is only in conjunction with Saturn that it can send its light into the air, in such a way that the butterfly can shine in the radiance of its many and varied colors. And thus when we behold that wonderful sea of fluttering butterflies in the atmosphere, we must say, that is in truth no earthly creation, but is born into the earth sphere from above. The butterfly descends no deeper with its egg than to where influences still reach the earth from the sun. The cosmos bestows on the earth the sea of butterflies. Saturn bestows their colors. The sun bestows the power of flight, called forth by the sustaining power of the light, and so on. Thus, I might say that we actually have to see in the butterflies little creatures strewn down, as it were, on the earth by the sun, and what is above the sun in our planetary system. The butterflies, the dragonflies, and the insects in general are actually the gift of Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, and the sun. And not a single insect could be produced by the earth, not so much as a flea, were it not that the planets beyond the sun, together with the sun, bestow on the earth the gift of insect life. And we do, in truth, owe the fact that Saturn, Jupiter, etc., are able to be so generous, and allow the insect world to flutter in upon us, to the first two stages of metamorphosis which the earth has passed through in its evolution. And now, let us look at the way in which the two last metamorphoses, the old moon condition and the earth condition, have played their part. In view of the fact that the butterfly's egg is never really entrusted to the earth, it must be pointed out that at the time when the moon metamorphosis, the third condition, was beginning, the butterflies were not yet as they are today. The earth, too, was not so dependent on the sun. At the beginning of the third metamorphosis, the sun was actually still united with the earth, and only later became separated. The butterfly, therefore, was not so averse to entrusting its embryo to the earth, because when it entrusted it to the earth, it was at the same time entrusting it to the sun. Thus here there arose a differentiation. In the case of the first two metamorphoses, one can only speak of the early ancestors of the insect world. But at that time, to entrust something to the cosmos, to the outer planets and the sun, still meant to entrust it to the earth. Only when the earth condensed, when it acquired water and the magnetic forces of the moon, did matters change and a differentiation appear. Let us assume all this belongs to the upper sphere of warmth and air. Let us now take the lower sphere of water and earth. And let us consider the embryos whose destiny it was to be entrusted to the earth, whereas others were held back and not entrusted to the earth, but only to the sun within the earthly. Now, let us consider the embryos which were entrusted to the earth at the time when the third metamorphosis, the moon, old moon condition, arose. These now came under the influence of the earth's activity, of the watery earth and moon activity, just as the insect embryos had formerly come under the influence of the sun activity and of what is beyond the sun. And through the fact that these embryos came under the influence of earth-water activity, they became, quote, plant embryos, close quote. And the embryos which remained behind, in the upper regions, remained insect embryos. When the third metamorphosis began, through what at the time was of a sun nature being transformed into what was of the nature of moon-earth, the plant embryos came into being. And what you now have in the butterfly under the influence of the extraterrestrial cosmos, this whole development from embryo to caterpillar, from chrysalis to butterfly, this you can now find in the plant. When the seed became earthly, it was not the butterfly which developed. But when the seed became earthly and was entrusted to the earth, not now to the sun, the plant root developed, the first thing to arise out of the embryo. And, instead of the caterpillar emerging from the chrysalis under the influence of the forces which proceed from Mars, the leaf arises, emerging in a rising spiral. The leaf is the caterpillar which has come under the influence of what is earthly. When you see the creeping caterpillar, you have in upper regions what corresponds below to the leaf of the plant. This develops out of what became root through the fact that the seed was transferred from the region of the sun to the region of the earth. Proceeding further upward, you get increasing contraction until at the top in the calyx you have the chrysalis. And finally the butterfly develops in the flower, which is colored just like the butterfly in the air. The circle is completed. Just as the butterfly lays its egg, so does the flower develop within itself the new seed for the future. So you see, we look up toward the butterfly and understand it to be the plant raised up into the air. Under the influence of the sun, with the upper planets, the butterfly from egg to fully developed adult is the same as the plant is here below, under the influence of the earth. When the plant comes into leaf, there is a diagram, we have from the earth aspect the influence of the moon, then the Venus influence, and the Mercury influence. Then there is a return to earth influence. The seed is again under the earth's influence. We can therefore contemplate two verses which give expression to a great secret of nature, quote, "Behold the plant, it is the butterfly fettered by the earth. Behold the butterfly, it is the plant freed by the cosmos." The plant, the butterfly fettered by the earth. The butterfly, the plant freed from the earth by the cosmos. If one looks at a butterfly, or indeed any insect, from the stage of the egg to when it is fluttering away, it is the plant raised up into the air, fashioned in the air by the cosmos. If one looks at a plant, it is the butterfly held in fetters below. The egg is claimed by the earth. The caterpillar is metamorphosed into leaf formation. The chrysalis formation is metamorphosed into what is contracted in the plant. And then the same principle that unfolds to produce the butterfly develops into the flower in the plant. Small wonder that such an intimate relationship exists between the world of the butterflies, the insect world in general, and the world of the plants. For in truth, the spiritual beings which underlie the insects, the butterflies, must say to themselves, "Down here are our relatives. We must maintain allegiance with them, unite ourselves with them, unite ourselves with them in the enjoyment of their juices and so on, for they are our brothers. They are our brothers who have been metamorphosed down into the domain of the earth, who have become fettered to the earthly, who have won another existence. And in their turn, the spirits who ensoul the plants can look up to the butterflies and say, these are the heavenly relatives of the plant on earth. You see, one must really say that understanding of the world cannot come about through abstractions, for abstractions do not attain to understanding. Cosmic activity is indeed the greatest of artists. The cosmos fashions everything according to laws which bring the deepest satisfaction to the artistic sense. And no one can understand the butterfly which has sunk down into the earth unless he metamorphoses abstract thoughts in an artistic sense. No one can understand how that which is contained in the flower of a plant has been raised up into the air by the light and by cosmic forces to be the butterfly, unless once again he can bring abstract thoughts into artistic movement. Nevertheless, there always remains something immensely uplifting when we turn our minds to the deep inward connection between the things and beings of nature. It is a unique experience to see an insect poised on a plant, and at the same time to see how astrality holds sway above the blossom. Here the plant is striving away from the earthly. The plant's longing for the heavenly holds sway above the iridescent petals of the flower. The plant cannot of itself satisfy this longing. Thus, there radiates toward it from the cosmos what is of the nature of the butterfly. In beholding this, the plant realizes the satisfaction of its own desires. And this is the wonderful relationship existing in the environment of the earth. Namely, that the longings of the plant world are assuaged in looking up to the insects, in particular the world of the butterflies. What the blossoming flower longs for as it radiates its color out into world space becomes for it something like known fulfillment when the butterfly approaches it with its shimmer of colors. Longing that makes warmth radiate outward, satisfaction streaming in from the heavens. This is the interplay between the world of the flowering plants and the world of the butterflies. This is what we should see in the environment of the earth. Having thus made the transition to the plant world, I shall now be able, in the next few days, to extend still further the studies which have so far taken us from the human being to the animals. We can now include the plant world, and thus we shall, gradually, come to man's connection with the whole earth. But for this it was first necessary to build, as it were, a bridge from the fluttering plant of the air, the butterfly, to the butterfly firmly rooted in the earth, the plant. The earthly plant is the firmly rooted butterfly. The butterfly is the flying plant. Having recognized this connection between earth-bound plant and heaven-freed butterfly, we have now established the bridge between animal world and plant world, and thus we can be quite unconcerned by all the inconsequential statements that claim spontaneous generation and the like took place. These prosaic concepts will never lead us into the regions of the universe to which we must attain. Those spheres are only reached when prosaic concepts can be transformed into artistic concepts, so that we may then arrive at an idea of how, from the heaven-born butterfly's egg that was entrusted to the sun alone, the plant later arose. When the butterfly's egg metamorphosed due to the fact that it was no longer entrusted only to the sun, but now developed a connection with the earth. The end of Lecture 4.